And down the home stretch we come. We're going to talk to a professor of electrical engineering at LSU in the second half of the hour about MISO and the brownout and ISO. What is an ISO? A lot of us didn't even have any idea what that was before it happened on Sunday in a load shed. What is all that? We didn't want to learn about that, but we did. Before that, though, we're going to celebrate National Maritime Month. Skip Lambert joins us now. Lambert Zaney. How you doing, Skip?
I'm good, Tommy. How you doing?
I am all right, sir. Tell me about National Maritime Month, first of all, and secondly, how important is the maritime industry to the area?
National Maritime Month is a tribute to the maritime industry and its importance, not only to our region, but also to the whole country, if not the world. Most of the time we think maritime, we think blue water. We think about the 90% of the world's traffic in commerce by volume goes over the seas. The thing that's more focused for us here in Louisiana is the Mississippi River. It and its tributaries account for a tremendous amount of commerce, agricultural, chemical, petroleum, all of those things flow through the Mississippi River and its tributaries. And we, of course, are right there at the Port of New Orleans, which is the crossroads to the world.
If it wouldn't be for that, really, I don't think there would be a reason for New Orleans to be here, would there?
Well, we're kind of unique in many, many ways, but I think the port of New Orleans and the fact that we're at the mouth of the Mississippi River is significant in terms of our development. We have, our unique culture and our magnificent food and tourist industry, but really the Mississippi River was the first highway system in the whole country.
And that's all I'm trying to say, Skip, is that something had to be here first, right? I mean, there had to be something for the rest of that to develop around, and that to me would seem like the port.
You're exactly right. And it's still today the major, our port is the major contributor to maritime commerce in the country. And there are other ports as well, but being at the mouth of the Mississippi River, the highway to the country, is really important.
I think a lot of us didn't really grasp how important the maritime industry was until COVID hit and supply chain issues and ships docked off of the California coast and so forth. Talk, if you will, Skip, about how much of the world's trade is carried by the maritime industry.
90%.
Wow.
90% by volume of the world trade is maritime. And I think the reason is pretty obvious, Tommy. The cost per ton of shipping by sea or by river is a fraction of the cost of shipping even by rail and certainly by truck and air. So that's the reason why 90% by volume is maritime, and that's just the way it is. And back to your original question, back in May of 1933 is when the Congress passed the National Maritime Day Bill, which is the 22nd, and then month, the whole maritime month, to recognize the importance of all of that commerce.
When it comes to, they got these websites you can go to where you can see the different flights that are over the country each day. Do you know, Skip, if there's an equivalent to see where the marine traffic is throughout the world? Because I would imagine we would all be shocked to see how many ships are traversing the different oceans of the world or seas of the world on a daily basis.
There are sites that allow that, and, I just don't have them handy, mm-hmm. Tommy, but I...
But we would be shocked, would we not?
Absolutely. And the thing that's even more shocking, I think, is think about where the population in America lives. exists. And it's along the Mississippi River and its tributaries primarily. And then there's California that has obvious ocean, Pacific Ocean access. But as you point out, the fact that the river and its tributaries are basically the artery of our country, and one of the reasons why we're leaders commercially around the world is because that system of maritime access existed naturally through the Mississippi River and the Missouri and all the other like-named rivers in the states in the Midwest and the East.
Matter of fact, I found it at marinetraffic.com. You can see all of the different ships that are in commerce. And what kind of products, Skip, when you say 90%? I guess just a little bit of everything?
Right, and a little bit of everything, but think about the bulk cargo. Things like grain and chemicals, petroleum, stuff that could be carried in bulk. That's the reason why, from a tonnage standpoint and by volume, the 90% figure world trade comes up. Containers with small items in them, surely that's a big part of commerce. But the volume of materials carried by barge on the river, tugboat pushing barges up and down the Mississippi, and then, of course, the deep water vessels that are capable of accessing New Orleans, Port of New Orleans, and other ports, Houston, of course, and some others along the East Coast. That's the big, big volume thing that you're looking at on that website, Tommy.
Is anything ever going to change about this? Because I don't see how this could ever be replaced. I mean, you know, you talk about the Jetsons and all that kind of stuff looking way ahead of the future, but because of the efficiency of it, I don't see how that maritime transportation ever goes away. Do you?
I don't, and I agree with you 100%. I think it's here to stay. It was here in the beginning. Mm-hmm. It's probably responsible for the development of America and the rest of the world from a trade standpoint. And I don't see any replacement. And I think it's the power of the water to carry heavy cargo, and the power of these ships that have hundreds of thousands of horsepower. I mean, think of it. They are incredible, mammoth trade promoting devices, and I don't see how that changes.
So what is next? Where does it, have they maxed out on the size of a ship? Have they maxed out on the efficiency when it comes to transporting goods, Skip? What's next? What do you see decades down the line?
You know, it's an excellent question, Tommy. One of the things that makes the Mississippi River and its tributaries so successful is that there are 237 locks and lock chambers in 190 locations along that freeway of commerce, the river. And those are size limited. And so to your question about are we maxed out on the size? I think the size of blue water maritime, which is
ocean
the thing that you're looking at with international
yeah.
trade or over the deep water mm-hmm. oceans, I think that continues to grow. But from the standpoint of what moves along the routes of commerce internally in America, for example, the Mississippi, you're limited in terms of size because of the lock systems, the changes in elevation, and the connections between the tributaries.
What about maintenance of those things, Skip? Is the money there and being allocated there? Are they being maintained properly? Because it is very important. If that were to go down, then, again, going back to COVID and supply chain, we know what a problem that can be.
Absolutely. Hopefully the legislature sees the importance and has so far. As a matter of fact, the St. Bernard port celebrates its completion of the Chalmette slip rehab project, which is a Stillwater slip over in St. Bernard Parish.
Wait, hang on a second. What is all that? That you're in this business, you know, but I don't know what that means. What is that?
It's a St. Bernard slip that services vessels and has a lot to do with the commerce in St. Bernard. And it, to your point, it was funded partially by the federal government, and the federal government continues to fund the maintenance of all these locking systems and lock chambers that are necessary to connect the various arteries and tributaries of the river. And so your point, your question is, and your point is this vital artery being maintained properly? And it is so far. And I think it needs to be. You can't cut back on the maintenance of these kinds of items because they're long-term and absolutely essential to the lifeblood of our country.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. I want to talk about locally the importance of the maritime industry, LNG plants, those kind of things, and ancillary jobs as well to the maritime industry. We're talking with Skip Lambert of Lambert Zaney, National Maritime Month. We're celebrating New Orleans' maritime industry. 9:20, more when we come back. Tommy Tucker, WWL. 9:25, it's National Maritime Month. We're celebrating New Orleans' maritime industry with you, Skip Lambert of Lambert Zaney. A friend texted me another site, vesselfinder.com. You can also check out the marine traffic, but you got to be careful, Skip, when you look at this, because what you think is land is actually water, and what you think is water is actually land, because the focus is on the ships, naturally. Let's talk about the importance of the LNG facility in Plaquemines Parish and the future of that type of thing as it relates to the ports of New Orleans and Louisiana and development in the future.
Great question. And actually, that LNG facility is a real good example of how maritime is growing. In other words, years ago, not that many, LNG transport by ship, liquid petroleum, natural gas, mm-hmm. was not even a commodity that was thought of as being highly desirable and helpful from a commercial standpoint. And now LNG transport worldwide is a tremendous industry. The facility down in St. Bernard that's operational now is the largest in the world. And it is an incredible complement to the worldwide need for energy. And as we talked a minute ago, Tommy, 55,000 jobs in Louisiana are supporting the maritime industry, and some 60 million globally. So the job, not just for the people on board the vessels and the maintenance of the vessels, but the support that comes along with it. Huge terminals, whether it's LNG terminals or whether it's just container ship terminals or what we think of as bulk terminals, where there's cargo being moved by stevedoring companies in massive tonnage amounts. All of those things support commerce and support our community.
I'm going to ask a question here because I don't think there are any dumb questions, but what is a stevedore?
There are no dumb questions, Tommy. You're right. Stevedores are the gentlemen and ladies who actually load and unload and arrange for loading and unloading of vessels. Bulk cargo, a stevedore and company will have to do with grain elevators and moving bulk materials from onshore or from barges along the river into ocean-going vessels. And the stevedoring community of companies are the people employed in that service to make the link, really, Tommy, between the land and river traffic and the ocean-going worldwide traffic that you're looking at on that app.
When you say 55,000 people, and I want you to talk, Skip, if you can, about what that looks like, first of all, in terms of who might be involved with the maritime industry, not necessarily on the vessel, like what kind of jobs you're talking about, and secondly, what kind of economic impact it has, because I know in Plaquemines, it's huge, especially that LNG plant. I always say when you see a parking lot that goes to Z, that's a big facility. That's a giant facility when you got parking lot X, Y, and Z that goes through the entire alphabet. But am I right or not? If you've been down there, you know what I'm talking about.
You're absolutely right.
So when it comes to like that kind of thing, talk about the economic impact and what kind of other jobs are involved with the maritime industry that maybe we don't think of that are necessary to it and important part of it.
Sure. And you're right on the money. The point is look at that LNG facility. You've got the welders, pipe fitters, every form that you could imagine of support trades for plant operations, electricians, pipe fitters, welders. These guys are essential to the operation of that plant. And the same thing can be said for smaller, more traditional facilities. For example, in New Orleans, if you look along the river, the skyline is covered with giant crane operations or machinery that support the moving of containers on and off of ocean-going vessels. All of those need to be maintained. And they're maintained by skilled employees of companies that support the infrastructure that allows for, again, the movement of all of these items from either the barge traffic into ocean going, and it goes the other way, where ocean going vessels come in and offload their crude materials to plants that then refine those materials into useful products that are distributed, if they're going to be used here in the United States, by rail and truck, or if they're processed and they're going to be shipped to other places, they get turned around and put back into commerce on the maritime nickel, so to speak. In other words, dependent upon the maritime industry.
So when we talk about economic impact and 55,000 jobs, I guess, Skip, I see it in Plaquemines Parish because this person might be working with the maritime industry, not on a vessel, but associated with it. But then, as a result, they spend money or they live here and spend money with somebody else who is dependent on that money, who spends money with somebody else who is dependent upon that money, right? So do you have any kind of idea what the economic impact?
You know, again, a great question, Tommy, and I struggle with that because where do you draw the line? In other words, those parking lots filled with vehicles, those people all have to eat and sleep and live.
Buy groceries.
And so that...
Clothes, shoes, you name it, right?
Yeah, there you go. And so the reason why the maritime industry is so pivotal is because it generates the need for all of those supporting operations, whether it's a clothing store or a cafeteria or a hamburger shop. I mean, we're talking about everything required to support the industry. And I think the reason why we celebrate Maritime Month in the maritime world is if you stop and think about it, it's so inclusive and a driving influence for everything that Louisiana particularly, and then all of the river communities and worldwide, the seaports, like the Port of New Orleans, but in other locations, all around the world. So where does it stop? I'll ask you, because I don't know. It seems to me like it can be defined as related to the maritime industry way beyond what we would traditionally think.
I think, Skip, it goes full circle of where we started, which is, if not for it, we wouldn't be here, right? I mean, honestly?
I think you're exactly correct.
Hey, real quick, before I let you go, I just wonder about the future of this, and it seems like, you know, with limits on this or limits on that, one area to me that seems unlimited is the maritime industry and maritime traffic, especially when you talk about transoceanic. So is that, if you were to look into the future 100 years from now, do you see massive growth in that area?
I do. I think that's exactly correct. I think that as the population grows and as the need for the commodities that are essential to our lives grow, I think the industry continues to grow. And I think that the development of technology goes right along with that. I mean, we do have nuclear aircraft carriers and submarines, but there's no reason why that kind of technology, which allows a ship to stay at sea without refueling for long, long periods of time, or to not just stay at sea, but to transit seas, there's no reason why those technologies can't develop. And you know, to that point, Tommy, the wind industry, renewable power, wind industry, all of the technology that it takes to keep petrochemical operations flowing in the Gulf of Mexico, all of those same sorts of services would be needed to support wind energy. In other words, you have to maintain those towers. You have to transport that energy from the windmill that creates it to shore. And so you've got all of the special equipment vessels that we have now to support the oil industry with some modifications. They would support a wind farm at sea in the Gulf.
I'm glad you brought that up, because sometimes, Skip, people look at oil and gas as either or with wind, but it can be both, and it's just about monetizing it, right?
That's exactly correct. And you're exactly right, Tommy. The renewables are the cleaner end of things, from an energy standpoint. They all require the same kind of support from the maritime world and the maritime industry as petrochemical.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time. I really do. Very informative stuff. Skip Lambert of Lambert Zaney, National Maritime Month. I think we all learned a little something there, didn't we? 9:38, we'll take a break. Come back. Speaking of learning about stuff, we learned about MISO and ISOs and load sheds and all of that when the power went out on Sunday. I never wanted to learn that. I don't want to learn it again, but we'll talk about it with a professor of electrical engineering at LSU when we come back. 9:38, traffic now, WWL. 9:44, 16 till 10. I bet you didn't know what an ISO was, or MISO. The only thing I knew about MISO, MISO, is miso soup that you get at a restaurant. And then what about load sheds? I didn't know anything about any of that until Sunday afternoon, Monday morning, really. And we're going to find out more about it now with Shahab Marine, a professor of electrical engineering at LSU. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. I'm pretty good. Yourself?
I'm okay. When you heard everything, I don't know, I guess you were not. I don't think this went to Baton Rouge. You were not without power, right?
Correct. I was out of town, though.
So I guess what I'm saying is when you heard about this, you read about it, did everything sound okay to you about it, or did it raise some eyebrows when you heard the initial explanation, et cetera?
I mean, from a scientific point of view, power system reliability is very important, and operating it is a challenging task. And incidents like this happen every day. There are thousands of equipment that you have to manage and monitor, and sometimes they trip off unexpectedly, and the engineers have to find ways to make system maintain its reliability. So it's not very unusual for these incidents, although it's not very, very likely.
Professor, let me bring the audience into this, because, again, I don't think there are any dumb questions, and I'm going to prove that to you in a minute with mine. But the Okunor Jeweler Talking text line, 504-260-1870. Don't text and drive, but if you have any questions about this whole thing, for Professor Marine, I'll be glad to pass them along. So let me ask you, give me the organizational chart, I guess, if you will, about an ISO. And because here's the deal, Professor, I don't write a check to ISO. I don't know anything about an ISO. I do business with Energy Louisiana, and that's who I blame when the power's not on, right? But this transcends them and goes beyond them, as I understand it?
That is correct. So MISO is one of the ISO's independent system operators. These are nonprofit organizations that look over and manage interconnection between multiple utility companies. And their purpose is, it's more reliable when you have multiple systems connected together. Sometimes you don't have enough power, and you can borrow from others. And sometimes you have surplus, and you can export it.
Who sets up these ISOs, professors? I'm just wondering historically. I hate to interrupt you, but who sets this up? How did these come to be? And when did they come to be?
When exactly, I don't have it on top of my head.
No, I mean 10 years, 20 years, 30 years?
No, it's been an old system. Okay. There are basically seven of them across the U.S., North America, if you will. And so MISO is one of the larger ones. They are regulated under the government, but government does not, govern them, if you will. They're independent. They're nonprofit. And, they basically manage the operation of all the utilities under their territories. But there's been a long time that they're in place.
Goes back to the 50s, as a matter of fact. I looked it up. So with that being said, do you understand what happened on Sunday? Because I'm getting so many different explanations of this. First of all, we heard that, I don't know who told us, the plant tripped offline, the River Bend nuclear plant, but now we find out that it was shut down on May 21st when they noticed a leak, a faulty valve in the reactor's cooling system that had to be fixed. So how does the power company coordinate with the independent system operator, and where does the weather factor in all of this? Because at some point, I'm guessing, the independent system operator has to anticipate demand from the systems where all of the systems that they independently operate serve. Accurate?
That is correct. The independent system operator has the weather forecast. They have like a day ahead. They have, 5 minute ahead predictions. They have various types of predictions for that weather and consumption. And they have simulators and software programs that actually help them manage the amount of power that's needed and the commands that's, sent to the different utility companies. So this incident, in my understanding, I don't have the details because right. These are majorly, things that are not shared with the public. These are engineering tasks, so they would probably come and explain what happened. But you predict, and their predictions are very reliable, as much as, it's possible, if you will. But there are unpredicted things that happen all the time. We understand that generators may trip because of a faulty device that you never know it's faulty until it trips. And when it trips, a large amount of power goes out. And you report that failure to to MISO, for example, and they decide whether they have to shut down a certain amount of power or not to maintain the entire grid reliable. If they don't do it, then that blackout may actually spread out throughout the system in a very short time, you know, in a matter of minute or so, or maybe less. The entire system could go down if you don't act in time. And so the failures that are unpredictable, you know, they may cause very quick decisions that, you know, cannot be done earlier or in advance.
Somebody texted in, who regulates MISO? Does anybody regulate MISO? You said the federal government regulates.
Federal government has certain acts and regulations, and all the ISOs obey them. So those are nonprofit and independent. So the rules and regulations apply to all of them, but their operation is not governed by the federal government or any state government.
They talk about the forecasting being off, and one question that I had, just, you know, as a civilian and not knowing what I don't know, is that, well, it's Memorial Day weekend. I've lived here all my life. I can tell you, it's going to be hotter than you-know-what and more humid than you-know-what. Do you understand what they mean by a forecast was off somewhere? Because I guess what I'm trying to figure out, Professor, and look, I'm no professor of electrical engineering at LSU, but I'm just thinking, well, whether it's 91 or 90, people are going to be using the air conditioner or 89. Does it really matter? Tell me about that. Does it matter?
The weather forecasts are pretty good nowadays. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there are anomalies. Sometimes there are issues with the model. You may predict a temperature, and it may turn out to be a little hotter. But there is a little bit of room in their prediction for those errors. So the weather prediction might be one issue, although I think it's unlikely. It's majorly perhaps device failures or system failures that are unpredictable, and the engineers must actually go ahead and do a very quick decision to maintain the reliability of the entire system.
Somebody texted in real quick before we run out of time. Why didn't we access or borrow power from another state or community if it was available? Isn't that the whole purpose of MISO?
That's also another interesting question. You have access to the other networks, but the transmission lines have capacities. They can't transmit significant amount of power in a short notice. Those are limited by physics, and you may only transfer a certain amount of power and not more. So if you don't have enough power inside, you may import from outside, but to a certain limit.
Gotcha.
So those engineering limitations are also in place.
So real quick, let me ask you this, and I try to be fair, okay? Are there instances where these ISOs worked perfectly and we avoided brownouts, or we avoided the power going out, and all we're doing now is focusing on the time that it didn't?
That is correct. They do a really good job to maintain the reliability of this huge grid. The U.S. and Canada, the grid in these two countries is enormous. And what they do with the interconnection and with managing power is really outstanding. And I don't know the details of their day-to-day operation, but I know that they do very precisely and very responsibly. I've been to a couple of these sites in Little Rock, Arkansas, and they know the engineers, run 24/7 to maintain the reliability of the grid. But sometimes incidents happen and they're beyond control.
Thank you, Professor. I appreciate your time. I just wanted to keep it fair. We'll take a break, come back, find out what Dave's got today. He's in for Newell on WWL.